Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
From the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, it's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the two-tone blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Week 4 of the Titans season. The Titans have the Falcons. Talking with TD is back. Another one of those editions, those hybrid editions where you get Talking with TD and Chase and TD as well. Excellent show lined up for you. As always, we got the play breakdowns. We're going to go over the muffed punt from Adoree Jackson. We're going to go over the sack that Calais Campbell was able to have on a twist that they ran. Roger Saffo is going to break that one down for you. Calvin's Corner looks at the defense. And we have our Phone a Friend segment where ESPN NFL Nation Atlanta Falcons reporter Vaughn McClure steps in, so you get to talk shop with him, and you can't forget Blow the Whistle. It's time to call some people out. We're going to blow the whistle on the whistleblowers, as Calvin Smith said. So stay tuned. This show is always brought to you by Tennessee Tickets. The Bills are coming in Week 5. Come on out, show your support. Make sure you go to TennesseeTickets.com to get your tickets. When you hit that purchase button, no fees are added. Have at it, folks. We will be right back and continue this show. Appreciate you tuning in. Chase and TD.
But maybe there's no Chase McCabe this week. It's a little different.
Hey, listen to this. I'm a bargain shopper.
Yeah.
And tonight, folks, you are getting a bargain. You're getting Talking with TD, Calvin's Corner, and Chase and TD is what I call a buy one, get two free.
All wrapped up in one. Not on Friday nights. We're moving it to Thursday. Preds game tomorrow here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And I'm Calvin Smith, sitting alongside Teron Davenport, super pumped to fill in for Chase today on Chase and TD.
Yes, sir. And we have a big show for you tonight. We have Vaughn McClure, ESPN's NFL Nation Falcons reporter. Obviously, there's a whole lot to get into because this 1-2 team has a lot to be broken down, from the quarterback to the defense to the special teams.
I think we have a lot
teams
to talk about after that Jaguars game.
The offensive line. I'll start with the offensive line, frankly. And we were talking about it before the break, or before we actually came on. Calais Campbell, man. That guy presented all kinds of problems for that Titans offensive line. And just like I said, man, I ducked out of the rain and I'm standing in the tunnel. And it was like Will Smith when he played Muhammad Ali, you know, and he came into the room. He's like, the champ is here. That's all I heard over and over again was big time players make big time plays and big time games. And he just said it over and over and over again. And I said, oh, my goodness. Ben Jones, Roger Saffo, Jamil Douglas, they better bring their A game tonight.
That's a 6'8" man in the tunnel getting ready for a game. And no, I mean, no wonder he went off. He was attacking where the Titans were the weakest at this point, and that's along that interior. Jamil Douglas hasn't been the best on the pass blocking this year, and you know, he's not really the guy who anyone expects to be the long-term option. And Calais Campbell just absolutely feasted and was a big reason Marcus Mariota would get a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket a few times, had to make some moves, and oh yeah, he also got sacked a lot.
Yeah, and it was tough for him. I will give Marcus credit. There were a few times where he stared down that daggone Calais Campbell, and he delivered a strike. There was one, it was a deep crossing route Delanie Walker. It was a third and long.
Mm-hmm.
Delanie had the deep crosser. He delivered a strike to him, and they got the first down. Of course, the very next play, Calais got his revenge and got the sack. But it was a tough outing because I let off with Calais Campbell. But let me tell you something. 41, Josh Allen, man, he had himself Jack Conklin for lunch.
Mm-hmm, he did.
And dinner. He ate Jack Conklin a lot. And you hate to see a guy, a former All-Pro, a Pro Bowl caliber player, have the struggles that he had with a rookie. But
yep.
Josh Allen is different.
Well, he was a superstar in the SEC. And I remember when I was going back watching the All-22, there was one play where Delanie Walker was given the assignment of blocking him. And I saw that and thought, oh, man, as good of a player as Delanie Walker is, he's not an offensive lineman. He's not equipped to block Josh Allen coming off the edge. So Josh Allen literally just kind of ran around him, forced Marcus up in the pocket, and an errant throw because he couldn't set his feet, even though I believe it was Jonnu Smith who was running across the field and was open, but Marcus couldn't see it because he was forced to get off his feet. And that's kind of a problem if Delanie Walker's having to go one-on-one with someone we know can be a great pass rusher in the NFL.
So let's get right into it because obviously we mentioned mismatches. What about play calling? I personally think this was a game where that short passing game, it had to be implemented.
Yeah.
And I think when you have guys getting defeated the way the offensive line was getting defeated, I think you have to incorporate quick-hitting plays. I think it's mandatory to get RPOs going. I think it's mandatory to use different plays that make it a lot easier for Marcus Mariota to read, whereas you're reading one defender.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? If he takes this curl, I'm going to throw the flat. Flat curl was something I remember we used to use that all the time in college. And it was basically stealing.
Yep.
Right? The linebacker plays the curl. Now, of course, this is in zone. The linebacker plays the curl, you throw the flat.
Mm-hmm.
He plays the flat, you throw the curl. And just make it easy to get the ball out of your hands quickly. And that's something that I think they could have done a better job of.
Well, because what do we know about Marcus Mariota? We know that he's good in situations where he doesn't have to think too much.
Right.
He's not the kind of cerebral quarterback who's going to pick you apart with all these different kind of changes at the line. And he's not, especially with all the offensive coordinator changes, he's just not mentally the sharpest quarterback in the NFL. And that's okay. And I think that's what's so frustrating for a lot of Titans fans right now is that sometimes he'll make these great plays, but then there are other times where it's like he's thinking about it and he kind of breaks down. His mechanics in the pocket get a little shaky. He kind of goes into this shell and he seems uncertain. And with Marcus Mariota, like you said, quick hitting passing is something that can be more easily replicable than long passing in those kind of situations where the Titans were down early, and that kind of forces you to get off your game plan a little bit. The Titans would rather play good defense, be sound fundamentally, and run the ball to Derrick Henry. But when Adoree Jackson has that play early on in the game that sets you behind the eight ball, you can't abandon what you want to do, but you're a bad coach if you don't make some kind of a small adjustment to ensure you're trying to get back in that game. And that's when things go downhill for Marcus Mariota, when everything isn't in the ideal situation that they were setting up for him with a strong running game and good defense.
Yeah, and the thing is, there are some throws that he makes down the field. That, like that throw, the drop in the bucket to Adam Humphries along the sideline.
Yep.
That was a beautiful throw. The throw to Tajay Sharp. Hey, by the way, Tajay did an awesome job of setting Jalen Ramsey up and stacking him and being able to catch that long pass. I think it was a 47-yarder. But those are throws that Marcus Mariota makes, and you're like, that's what I'm talking
about.
It's
there. It can happen.
And that's the thing. But then there are times where he doesn't connect with his receivers. He doesn't see them, or he tends to brace himself too early when he's about to get sacked. And that's the thing. There is a way that you could take a QB pressure and keep it from being a sack, and that's by getting rid of the ball. And he even showed that in glimpses. And that's why it's just so frustrating watching a guy like Mariota, because he shows you so much. But then at the same time, he shows you so little. It's tough. But, I mean, again, when you have the offensive line taking a beating up front, you have to make some adjustments. And one of the things that the Jaguars did really well was actually they played games up front, whereas they were able to go against Roger Saffold and Ben Jones or even Dennis Kelly and Saffold, and they had different twists and those type of things going on. And that's how you take a guy like Clarence Campbell and a guy like Yannick Ngakoue and you make them even better through the games that you play.
Exactly. And the Jaguars defense, that's exactly what they had to do, because when we look at this Titans offensive line, they're without Taylor Lewan. Roger Saffold is new. Jahmyr Douglas isn't the guy. I'll just put it like that. He isn't the guy. He's not a standout at any really one thing. He's just kind of there, is the nicest way I can put it. And playing those games, like you said, where they're mixing things up just makes life really hard if you're in that situation where the continuity isn't at its best 3 weeks into the season.
And, you know, the thing was, on that particular sack that I'm talking about where they played the game, it was almost like they blocked it right, but there just wasn't anything there for Mariota. And then in addition to that, you had Josh Allen looping from the outside. Mm-hmm. And it was basically, like, I always use the saying, like, I always liken pass rush to hunting, right? Lions hunting gazelles. And that's exactly how that situation was, because you had the one come from the outside to flush Mariota up. And then in the game that they played up front, Campbell got the interior pressure, and then Ngakoue got the interior pressure, and mm-hmm. Campbell was there to clean up when Mariota tried to flush out of the pocket. As a matter of fact, as we said, talking with TD is going to be incorporated into this show, buy one, get two free. So we're going to go ahead and go to the breakdown with Roger Saffold. He's one of the play breakdowns for this week.
So this was the play with 91 and 93. They ran the game up front, and they ended up getting a set. What are you seeing on this play?
Right now what I'm seeing is that I got a wide one. Make sure I get it to Dennis. Dennis takes over the three. We have the late twist with 91. That we knock him outside. Jack is doing a good job of running him around the edge. There's nothing really downfield. So Mariota tries to run and kind of runs into Dennis and Jack's block.
Now, when you have that kind of game that they play, like, what's the fundamental, like, what's the coaching point? How do you go against that?
We actually do just what we did. The guard is supposed to punch the three technique out to the tackle. The tackle takes it over, and we make sure that the tackle is secure before we go out to the end, and then we push the end out, and that's what we did.
Now, this week with McKinley and Beasley, was Grady Jarrett, they like to kind of coordinate the pass rush when you have a deeper guy on the outside, but then, you know, how much does not being able to protect that pocket on the interior, like, how much does that make those pass rushes more effective?
Not being able to protect the interior, how?
So, if a guy is coming wide and he's deeper,
yeah,
and you know how the quarterback wants to step up within the pocket,
yep,
to avoid that deeper pass rush, but if he can't, that rush will get there.
Basically, I mean, you know, they do run deeper, but as long as you're running them past around, I say 10 to 12 yards, we should be able to keep the structure of the pocket intact. If we got to protect for the center and the inside two guards, I mean, the biggest things you can't do is get bulled into the quarterback's lap. That's the one thing that you want to avoid. And when you got guys like Bailey and people who have the quickness of Jarrett, you got to make sure that you're able to keep in front of them and keep and stay firm.
Thanks.
So that was Roger Saffold explaining that game that they played. And there's a reason why I asked that last question. We're going to get into that in a couple segments.
Yep.
I want to talk about the coordinated pass rush. And I actually had a good conversation with Coach Vrabel on a sidebar about this. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But I do like the way Saffold said that it's so important to keep that interior part of the pocket mm-hmm. secure
yep.
so the quarterback could step up. Unfortunately, it wasn't there for him this time.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what we talk about with Tom Brady, too, is how do teams beat Tom Brady? How do they beat the New England Patriots? They have guys like Fletcher Cox who can beat you up the middle
mm-hmm.
and force Tom Brady to move around in a way that he's not comfortable with. And that's an underrated part of the game. Maybe the most underrated part of football is guard play that people don't talk about because it's not easily understandable and it's not flashy. But we're seeing with the Tennessee Titans right now how you need stable guard play, or it's really hard for your quarterback to get comfortable in the pocket, to move around, or go through his progressions correctly.
You mentioned the importance of attacking Tom Brady up the middle.
Yep.
That sack strip that Brandon Graham had to kind of seal the Super Bowl, he bumped inside to play D-tackle.
Yep.
And he forklift that right guard, and he was able to swipe that ball away. So that's an example of just the importance of attacking the middle part of the
offensive line.
Lost my train of thought. Yeah, the interior part of the pocket. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back. We got ESPN NFL Nation reporter Vaughn McClure.
Artificial intelligence is taking over the world.
How can I help you today?
So put it to work for you.
Your appointment is at 9 a.m.
Ask Alexa to
enable 1025 the game.
Okay.
Once enabled,
Alexa, play 1025 the game.
The future is here.
Let me help you with that.
Ask Alexa to enable 1025 the game.
Straight out the jungle. Yeah. This real rap, no mumble.
All right, back from the break, Chase and TD. We're going to keep it moving. This is kind of like the segment I call phone a friend, right? You know, you got to use your lifelines. So I'm going to use my ESPN NFL Nation connections. We're going to bring in my guy, Vaughn McClure from Atlanta, Hotlanta, straight out the jungle. Vaughn, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. I appreciate you coming on. And I want to kind of just get right into this situation that the Titans secondary has on their hands. I mean, 11 is basically a human cheat code. What is it about Vaughn, what is it about Julio Jones that makes him such a dangerous threat in the passing game?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the thing that I've noticed about Julio being around him all these years is he's already athletically gifted, but the guy works just as hard, if not harder, than anybody. He works to perfect his craft. I watch him in practice. He really explodes out of his breaks. I mean, just a great all-around player. And he's always looking for little ways to get better. You'll see him on the jugs machine after practice. You'll see him talking to the other receivers and kind of discussing, hey, how can we do this better? What can we do better? So that's one thing, is he's got the drive to be the best. And I'm going to tell you this. He respects the other defensive backs that he's going against, but he doesn't praise them, okay, because he feels like he's the best around. Hmm. He feels like nobody can stop him, and that's the mentality that makes him such an unstoppable guy. Yeah, he might give this DB a little bit of credit here and there, but he's not going to say, hey, you know what? I'm worried about this guy. I'm studying this guy or whatever. He feels like he's that good that nobody can stop him.
Now, I talked to defensive coordinator Dean Pease, and he talked about how quarterbacks nowadays – even if a guy is covered, they're still throwing them the football. With Julio, are they getting into a situation where they force feed him the football, or how is it coming about where he's consistently getting targets, but it's the right targets?
Well, that's a great question. I'm going to tell you why. I don't think Matt Ryan forces him the ball enough, okay? You look at some of the interceptions that Matt has. That hasn't always been to Julio. I mean, the one that he had last week, he threw to the tight end, Stocker. He probably should have been throwing to Julio in that scenario. I think you got to give Julio more chances, even if he is drawing the two-man, like he always likes to say, he's always drawing two-man. Give him a chance to go up there and get the ball, because he can go up and get the ball in that kind of traffic. So when you ask that question like that, that's what I see. Matt Ryan, he's got 6 interceptions right now. He had 7 all year last season. Mm. He's forcing the ball in some situations, but again, I don't feel like it's always to Julio. And plus, he's got a lot of targets to go to, and he should spread the ball around, even though you know Julio is the number one guy.
Joined by ESPN Falcons reporter Vaughn McClure here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Vaughn, I want to ask you about another wide receiver in this talented Falcons wide receiver room, and that's Calvin Ridley. He got off to a pretty good start to the year, 4 catches, 64 yards, then exploded in week 2, but then in week 3, 1 catch for 6 yards against the Colts. What kind of happened there that led to that inconsistency?
Had a great conversation with Calvin about that this week, and he said, plain and simple, he couldn't shake free from the Colts with their coverage, with their cover 2. And they really, he said there really was no wiggle room for him to get free in that game. In fact, offensive coordinator at the Dirk Cutter at the podium on Monday, he blamed himself. He said, I didn't do a good enough job of getting Calvin Ridley involved, but then Ridley came back and said, hey, look, Coach Cutter's done a great job of getting me involved the first couple games, but look, against the Colts, I just couldn't shake free. And one thing that happened too, guys, he showed up on the injury report with a hip injury that we did not know about. Calvin told me it's something that happened against the Eagles. He got hit coming across the middle by McLeod and hit him on the right side. He seems to be okay. He's limping a little bit, but he said he's going to be okay to play. But Calvin Ridley is a great target. He's a guy that's going to be great for years to come. And here's the thing. We talk about Julio Jones. When Julio gets that double coverage, then that opens up opportunity for guys like Ridley to be single covered and win their one-on-one matchups. And to me, Calvin Ridley, one-on-one against somebody, he's going to win those matchups because he's such a great route runner.
With this wide receiver core and a good quarterback in Matt Ryan, have you seen a defense against the Falcons that can stop Julio, slow down Calvin Ridley enough, and stop the offense in a successful way where the opposing team's offense doesn't have to go out and score 30 points to beat them? And what do they do when they're successful?
Well, yeah, like I just said, a little bit with the Colts with their cover two. You know, they were able to bracket both Julio and Ridley on the edges and you know, the tight end, Austin Hooper, he had some open looks because of that. But when you're slowing down those guys, Ridley and Julio both had 100-yard games against the Eagles. So the Colts said, hey, you know what? We're not going to let these two guys beat us. You can beat us with the other guys. And it worked. It worked in their favor in that game. Also, when I go back to the Eagles game, they blitzed Matt Ryan a lot. They really blitzed zero coverage. Matt Ryan said it was the most blitzing that he had seen in his career. And it ended up working in their favor that they were able to get after him. But guess what? The Falcons still was able to pull out that game despite all the zero coverage he was seeing.
And that's really interesting because Jim Schwartz traditionally doesn't blitz. So there must be something that he saw. I want to flip it to the other side because I feel like the Falcons' defense is full of playmakers. And obviously, Keanu Neal is out. But Tack McKinley is an interesting player. What is it about him combining with Vic Beasley and those guys attacking on the outside? What makes them so effective?
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you would bring his name up first, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Teron, that he has some ability. But when I'm looking at their line, the first guy I'm looking at is Grady Jarrett. Okay,
that's where I was going next.
Grady makes that whole line work. You know, he's such a disruptive force in the middle. I think he makes things so much easier for Tack and Vic coming off the edges because people have to be concerned about what Grady Jarrett's going to do and the way he's able to get into the backfield. And Teron, if I'm going to look at those two pass rushers, I know Vic Beasley's had a couple sacks here, but I like the dog that Tack McKinley has in him. He's a dog. You know, they need that kind of dog like, hey, you know, he don't care about nothing. He's trying to eat you. You know what I'm saying? That's just who he is. And they need that kind of mentality up front. If he works on polishing his pass rush moves and gets better and works with Dan Quinn, who's supposed to be the defensive line guru, and improves his game, he can be a dominant force. I think what happens with Tack McKinley sometimes, he gets a little frustrated with himself when he doesn't get to the quarterback. He gets a little frustrated with himself when he hears criticism. But if he can channel that in the right way, yes, Teron, I think he's going to be a really good player in this league.
Yeah, and that's where I was going next because I wanted to lead into just a coordinated pass rush. We have Grady Jarrett collapsed in the middle, and then you have the guys on the outside. But let's go to the second level of the defense and look at Deion Jones. How effective can he be against the run, and how big of a part of the run defense is he?
And good. I love the questions that you're asking because you ask great topics that are very topical to what they're dealing with right now. With Deion, don't get me wrong. Deion is a great, great player. He's fast. He's a guy that makes up for a lot of mistakes that people make because he can make up for it because he's probably one of the fastest, if not the fastest, linebacker in the league.
Yeah.
But Deion is small, okay?
Right.
Don't get that wrong. Deion's a small guy. So there's been offensive linemen, particularly with Philadelphia, that he's experienced in his years, that the offensive linemen will get on him and knock him out the way like nothing because he's a smaller guy. His linebackers coach, Jeff Ulbrich, has talked all the time about, hey, you need to pick up a little bit more weight. You know, so he can play that big boy ball and stuff like that. Great player. Great, great player. I love the way he plays, and he's perfect for today's linebacker. You know, it's not like the Brian Urlachers of years before with these big old linebackers and stuff like that. He's got that speed and stuff like that, but that's where I think sometimes teams take advantage. They say, okay, he's a smaller guy. Let's run at him. Let's get this offensive lineman blocking him out the way, and then you got room to run. So that's where I think they want to see Deion improve a little. He's great at covering running backs out of the backfield, okay? He might cover a tight end here and there. He can keep up with those guys, okay? But, you know, if you're going to run straight at him and put a big body on him, that might be where you can be effective.
Teron mentioned it towards the beginning of the interview. Keanu Neal went out last week, and Kamal Ishmael steps into his place. Now, he's a guy who's been in the league since 2013, but is there how much of a drop-off do you expect to be in production and being in the right place as a safety going down from Neal to Ishmael?
Well, what they're going to do, it's not going to be about Ishmael totally. It's going to be safety by committee. What I can see the Falcons doing, of course, you know, you're going against, I'm assuming the Titans like to run big personnel. So I think when they have that big personnel out there, you know, whether it be a couple tight ends, whether it be with Derrick Henry running the ball, I think Ishmael's your guy because he's a good tackler. He's kind of a good in-the-box guy. But when you're talking about coverage, I think they're going to switch some things up. I think you can see DeMonte Casey, who led the league with 7 interceptions last season. He's playing the nickelback role. I can see him maybe dropping back into safety in certain situations. There's a kid named Sherrod Naisman that plays safety. I can see him playing that role in some situations. Ricardo Allen is starting free safety. He's played some strong safety in the past, so maybe they move him over. Maybe they let Casey come back to the free safety role. So I think it'll be a safety by committee in replacing Neal, but Ishmael's going to be the guy that kind of brings the hammer, is going to be the kind of guy that comes in and be the run stopper, the run support, the in-the-box guy. He's a bigger guy. He was playing linebacker, so you know, they made him switch back over to safety. So I think he can help in that aspect, but you're not going to replace Keanu Neal. Keanu Neal meant a lot to this team. Not only was he kind of like the heart and soul, but he was the enforcer out there. And he had become better in coverage, especially against tight ends. I see him improve a lot in that area. So that's going to be something that they definitely miss.
No doubt about it. Vaughn, we appreciate you taking some time. And listen, I'm going to be there Saturday afternoon. I definitely need a couple recommendations as far as places to go and eat. So you could definitely shout that out for me when you get a chance. Shoot me a text message, man. I have to get that from you.
Okay. I got you, brother, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Okay, guys. Take care.
No doubt. Appreciate you, Vaughn.
Okay.
So that was Vaughn McClure, ESPN. Man, that's a lot of knowledge about this football team, and I appreciate Vaughn sharing that. Deion Jones, it's an interesting situation with him, and he's right. He is a bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I always like about smaller guys is their agility, their ability to make these linemen miss in space. So we'll see how that works when these guys try to get to the second level and block him so that Derrick Henry can – do what he does and break off those runs.
Well, Derrick Henry's bigger than him, and that's something I feel like we can say a lot, but Derrick, a running back being bigger than a linebacker is always going to be a plus, and we've never seen Derrick Henry get caught in the open field, so it's not like he's just a bruising back. But Deion Jones in the coverage game is something I'm also excited to see if he's on Delanie Walker at some point.
Yeah, that'd be something to see. So we'll definitely stay tuned for that. We're going to go ahead to a break. We kind of led into the next topic with Vaughn. We're going to talk about coordinated pass rushes. We'll be right back.
Stay up to date on the latest news in sports. Take us wherever you may go with the Game Nashville app.
Tap that app.
Just search ESPN, the Game Nashville, on Google Play or iTunes. And download the Game Nashville app now.
Chase is somewhere on a beach.
He's out there living the lavish life of a radio host. You know how that goes.
Sitting on a chair, pair of long shorts on with a flowered shirt. Some sunglasses, ice cream cone, a drink with an umbrella in it. Chase is living the life.
Can't fault him for taking a little vacation, going down to Florida, having some fun. But I'm here. Don't worry. Calvin Smith in for Chase McCabe this week on Talking with TD.
That's right. That's right. And what we did was bring in the lefty, huh? We went to the bullpen.
The southpaw out of the bullpen, Calvin Smith.
So we talked a little bit about offense. We talked about defense. And looking back at that Jaguars game, obviously there are three phases to the game. Offense, defense, special teams. The Titans are a team who had fared pretty well on the turnover side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Had a big turnover against the Jaguars. They managed to keep the Jaguars, or just keep an offense, period, from scoring on the opening drive for the first time. They managed to keep them from doing that. However, Adoree Jackson had a muffed punt, and that put the Jaguars right back into position.
On like the 2-yard line, right?
It was the 7-yard line.
The 7, okay.
But still, it's inside the 10, yeah. So call it what you want. Either way, it was scoring position. I wanted to talk to Adoree, and I respect Adoree for sitting down and breaking this play down with me, because for the most part, when I break the plays down, it's something that a guy does well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was a big mistake. Let's go ahead to Adoree Jackson talking with TD, breaking down that mistake he made on punt return.
So we can slow it down right here. I thought it was going to get up. It bounced at like the, I don't know, with the 35, 40, whatever it be. I was waiting on to get another hop. You know, usually it gets a second hop to a small hop and a big hop, so the hop in my hand. That's what I was waiting on. I didn't get that. The ball kept rolling. Then at this point, where I'm at, the 16, I'm just trying to get on the ball. I'm trying to get the ball, you know, to stop it from keep rolling. Misjudged it in my hands. Well, didn't misjudge it. Just didn't grasp it in my hands. And then I got hit, and then the ball popped out. I couldn't grab it from there.
Was it kind of a matter? And then there's an end zone view, too. That'll help you see it better.
No matter what.
Was it kind of a matter of the ball was just slippery and it slipped out? Or were you trying to run before you had it?
No, it didn't have nothing to do with the conditions of the field and things. Just, I guess when I tried to pick the ball up, I didn't grab it right. I didn't get enough of the ball, and it just slipped out of my hand. But it didn't have nothing to do with the ball being slippery or the conditions of the field or whatever it may be. It's just the way that the ball was moving. I didn't get it correctly.
Now, with how explosive you were in college, obviously you were one of the best returners there. Do you find yourself trying to be too aggressive, like pressing too much to get back to that form, or what would you say is keeping that performance at USC from coming here to the league?
No, I don't think I'm trying to be too aggressive or press to do anything on this situation. Me trying to stop it from going from a bad kick to turning into a good kick, and it's going from a bad kick to turn into a bad play on my behalf. Never out there pressed to do something. I'll just let it come to me, or let it let the game come to me. So just the returns, I haven't had any, but I've made some electrifying runs. I have had some, but I haven't had one that went to the house. So it's not me being pressed in that situation.
All right, thanks.
I know Adoree is saying he's not pressed and he's not being too aggressive, but obviously, he's the one doing it, so he's going to know. But I feel like he is pressing to make plays.
Uh-huh.
And I think in this situation, it's an example of it, because if the guy lets the ball roll, it keeps going back, and now it's down inside the 5, and it's like, dadgum it, Adoree, when are you going to start fielding these punts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here it was, he went to field it, albeit on that hop, and it took an extra hop. He wasn't expecting it to. And I'll tell you, a football, the way it's shaped, there's no telling where it's going to go when it hops and rolls. But I think this really was a case of him trying, not necessarily to do too much as far as catching and running, but trying to do too much as far as keeping it from rolling. And he kind of touched on that.
Uh-huh.
When he said he didn't want a bad punt to turn into a good punt.
Adoree Jackson is a very natural athlete. Like, he's just a guy who did the triple jump in college at USC, a great track program. And I watch him out there right now, and I don't see the guy I saw with the Trojans. He doesn't mm-hmm. have that same swagger, which makes me think as well, maybe he's pushing it a little. Maybe he's trying too hard. Maybe he's a little nervous. He's overthinking it. I don't know what exactly it could be, because I'm not in Adoree's head, but it could be any one of these things, because that guy in college was just running around the field,
just having
tons of fun. Yeah. Exactly. But you don't see that from him right now. And I don't know if that's something with the culture of the Titans and how they're running, but that cornerback, that defensive back group is really fun.
Yeah.
I just, it's a mixed bag with him, and it starts with mental lapses, and then I think it comes down to second-guessing himself. Because like we talked about with Marcus Mariota, a natural athlete, you just want out there on the field making plays. And there's a mental side to this game that you certainly have to take into account. But Adoree Jackson seems to be a little bit too deep into it and in his own head right now for the natural, amazing athlete that he is.
And that's something coming into camp he said he was working on.
Yep.
He wanted to work on not perfecting, but getting the mental part of the game right for him. And I'm not so sure that that's happening. It's Marcus Mariota and Adoree Jackson to me are the same player.
Yeah.
Right? They're the same player where it's, you saw them do some things in college and it's just like, whoa, I need that on my team.
Yes.
Now that is on your team, you see flashes. Like that interception he had last year in week. Yeah, we're going to last year to bring up good plays, but so what? That interception he had last year in, it was week two, I want to say. No, week three, the Texans game.
Okay.
Where he out-jumped Nuke Hopkins to make the interception in the end. That was a beautiful play.
Yep.
And it showed his ball skills. That game that he had against the Browns. That's how far back I'm going with Josh Gordon. The game that he had against the Patriots.
Yeah.
The way he put the clamps on Josh Gordon. That is what I'm talking about. That's the USC Adoree Jackson. But it's just, this is not something that has come to the surface enough for this team.
That's what's so tough about the NFL, is you can be the greatest athlete on the field, but there's a mental side of the game that Adoree Jackson and Marcus Mariota seem to have to figure out, and it's different for every player. Like, we see the comparisons between Adoree and Marcus is very similar, but at the same time, they might have completely different ways of needing to get it done and adjustments they need to make inside of their head, different things that can happen with the coaches to relate to them, to get their confidence back. We saw kind of a different coaching style with Taywan Taylor in training camp, and he ultimately got traded. Mm-hmm. So it's a mixture of these things with the coaching staff, and Mike Vrabel's mentioned, hey, he's got to cut out the mental lapses, and how do they respond to him is also important.
Right, and at that position, mental lapses, man, when you're a cornerback, you're the last line. Like, you're literally the difference between a long play and a touchdown. So a short mental lapse could be a huge issue for the team. I tell you where else a mental lapse could be. That team wearing the Foot Locker uniforms, those officials. And like I said, talking with TD is being fused into Chasing TD this week. One of my favorite segments when it's time to blow the whistle. Elijah, let me get that music, please. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. That's right. You hear too short, blow the whistle. So that means it's time to call somebody out. Let me tell you this. These officials in this Jaguars game. All right, let's start on the holding. Yeah. These guys seem to want to call holding, and I understand holding happens on almost every play. It doesn't mean you got to call it on almost every play. This is prime time. You don't have to extend the game. I understand. I believe that was. Yeah, that game still had the second half is when they cut down on it.
Yep.
But, man, too many of those. But more importantly, there were two egregious calls. Just two that I'm calling. Hey, listen. I don't even want to.
You're trying to, like, hold in the anger. Like, you're pretty frustrated. You're just like, man, don't say something you'll regret, Teron.
Exactly. So let me say it this way. The guys up there in New York, you guys had to get it together. Because you have crews out here misrepresenting you. That pass interference call on Logan Ryan was 100% pure, unadulterated horse crap.
The nice way of putting it.
If anything, that was offensive pass interference because the receiver gave a little nudge to create that separation. I'm not so sure that the ball was catchable, but regardless, he gave that nudge to create that extra separation. It was interesting what DNP said today. He said, you know, receivers don't push off nowadays. They ward guys off. And that's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm.
You got to call that. The other one. Now, last time I checked, and I know everybody loves the stash, right? And the jorts and Gardner Minshew mania. It's not daggone Tom Brady. Why on earth? Kamale Correa, they called that roughing the passer. I mean, what? I don't tuck my 11-year-old daughter in bed at night with more care than Correa laid Gardner Minshew down. How on earth do you call roughing the passer on that one? My whistle is blown on these officials, man. That was nonsense.
Blowing the whistle on the whistleblowers. And the really crazy one to me was the Kamale Correa one. Because I saw that and I'm just like, that's a football play. I mean, there is absolutely no way Correa could have stopped himself because he was right on his back when it happened. And I know officials have a tough job. This all happens in a split second. And there's been kind of a directive that I think has come down from the NFL office where they're going to call more penalties because they want to see this shift in the game for, you know, the litany of reasons that are out there with the lawsuits. But on these holding calls, something really interesting has come up, and Pro Football Focus did a nice study on the holding calls and how that can affect a running game and how it can consistently set back a running game if they're going to call more holding. And that's something you really want to see a lot, Teron, is Derrick Henry getting the rock and staying committed to him. But it only makes it harder for the Titans to do that if the NFL wants to call more holding calls, and that really scares me for the identity of how the Titans want to make their offense if that's the direction the league is choosing to take.
It's a terrible direction. They have to get it together, but at least to their credit, there were a lot less holding calls in the Sunday games.
And I think that's something they're intentionally doing. They'll kind of pick and choose their battles. Maybe this is me overthinking it with a big conspiracy theory, but picking and choosing your battles to kind of tamper it, to throw some water on the fire. Hey guys, just so you know, like, we will be calling these. We could be calling these. Here's the evidence that we'll call this, so don't do it. Maybe.
Well, we did a good job of not losing our cool during that blow the whistle segment. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how the Titans have done a good job of not losing their cool in the locker room despite losing back-to-back division games. We'll be right back.
From Morning Drive with Nick Cale, Braden Gall, and Derek Mason.
He needs to be the driving force.
To Darren and Donick with Darren McFarland and Willie Donick.
They've been talking about this all year.
To Jared and the GM with Jared Stillman and Floyd Reese.
You can't have it without the players wanting to be what they are.
No one covers your teams like Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Move. Get out the way. Get out the way. Get out the way.
This is Jason TD here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Calvin Smith filling in for Chase McCabe this week. Normally we're on Fridays. Preds game tomorrow. We move the show to a Thursday night. And we're about to go into a weekly segment on Teron Davenport's podcast, Talking with TD, called Calvin's Corner, where I do my favorite thing and I go into the analytics and the numbers and pull out some little fun things that are all related to the analytics of the growing analytics in the football world. But first, I want to make sure you know, you can go find every episode of Talking with TD on thegamenashville.com under the On Demand tab. Just go find Talking with TD in Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts. The podcast is there for you to go listen to for the absolute best Titans podcast out there, I believe in my humble opinion. But for this week's Calvin's Corner, typically I like to focus on the offense. And that usually means I say throw the ball more. I always say throw the ball more. But this week, I want to look at the defense and kind of where they've been weakest in terms of giving up rushing plays through what gap and passing at what distances on what side of the field. So I went in and I looked at the left side of the defense versus the right. When the offense attacks the right side of the field versus the left side of the field, deep and short. And the Titans' defense is significantly better when the offense is attacking the left side of the field, which is Malcolm Butler's side. They give up about 13.67 yards on deep passes, where the minimum to reach a deep pass is 15 yards. So if you're below the threshold to get it there, well, that's pretty good. Versus on the other side of the defense, 20.5 yards on the 6 deep passes that have been attempted to that side. That's not too good, and that's a Dory Jackson side of the field where they've been beat deeper, more consistently, and opposing offenses have attacked that side of the field more on the Tennessee Titans, and then a couple times the Titans have been beat up the middle, but there isn't as much sample size there to make it as valid, but Dory Jackson's side of the defense just hasn't been as locked down as Malcolm Butler's side.
It goes back to what I said about Malcolm being a feisty corner. And I granted, right, that DJ Chark, he had a couple catches that just, you know, they were just good catches.
Yep.
Including the 7-yard touchdown. But I think Malcolm has quietly settled in and become not a lockdown corner, because I think there's only two or three of them, right? I would say two. Patrick Peterson, well, three. Patrick Peterson, Stephon Gilmore, and good old Jalen Ramsey. I don't think he's getting enough credit for just how he overcame that rough situation earlier and just settled in as a player.
Well, even on short passes, that side of the field has been better. They don't even give up 6 yards per pass on short passes. And then on the other side, on the right side of the defense, over 6 yards per pass attempt. So again, they're just better on that side. That's clearly the side that they can be a little stronger towards, which kind of makes me think, well, how do you shade Kevin Byard then? Because you're more susceptible to the deep ball. You give up more short yardage to the other side of the field on the Dory Jackson side. You probably shade Kevin Byard a little bit more to that side, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would – listen, end of the day, the biggest thing that you have to do as a safety is keep plays from becoming big plays.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're saying that the deep passes are coming to one side, I think personally that's the side you want to shade Byard to. And the thing that's really good about having a guy like Byard is he's so rangy.
Yep.
So you could have him shade towards one side if you're going to be in single high. He's still able to play center field good enough to where he could get to the other side of the field. Not other side of the field, because that's impossible, but cover a little bit more of the field being shaded still.
Here's something else I found really interesting. When looking at how offenses are attacking the Titans' front seven in terms of run gaps, when you look at when offenses attack the right side of the Titans' defense, 8.73 yards per carry versus the left side, 3.73. That's a major difference when it comes to stopping the run. When offenses run right, they're having pretty good success with a few big runs in there. Now, you know, one of those is Leonard Fournette's big run, and that's kind of going to count against you. But still, that's a pretty major susceptible hole that has to be filled, because still in today's NFL, you got to be able to stop the run. No matter how much the league wants to throw the ball, that's still an important part of sealing games and controlling the clock.
Listen, Coach Mack said it the best when I talked to him about Derrick Henry's record-setting run when I did the oral history. He said that defense, like as a defensive coach or just as a defense period, nothing is more backbreaking than an explosive run like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that has to be frustrating for the Titans is in their last two losses, pretty much a long run sealed the deal.
Yeah.
That's a problem they have to work on. And those two runs, I believe they had. Yeah, in Fournette's run, they had the box stacked, and he was at a negative.
He went positive on that run.
Right. They had the box stacked, and he got to that second level, and whew, it was gone. So a team that normally tackles really well has to tackle well, especially when they have 8 in the box. And he showed why on that, 69-yard run, I think it was.
Yeah, and that's not something I think we anticipated being a big issue for this Tennessee Titans defense, right? We're talking about the strong suit of the team, and overall, they've been a good defense. We see that in point scores. We see that in yards given up in every aspect. But this is also kind of my way of saying, hey, the defense is doing a good job. And I wanted to give that a little bit of give him a little bit of recognition here on Calvin's Corner, especially Malcolm Butler's side of the field, which has been significantly better and doesn't get targeted as much as Adoree Jackson's side. So opposing offenses also recognize that and say, hey, maybe we'll attack the other side that Malcolm isn't on.
Did you have any red zone stats in your package there that you put together?
Not offhand, and I should note, these stats are coming from situations that aren't garbage time. Okay. So, like, where, you know, the offense is either just throwing because they're trying to come back, or just running to run out the clock.
Got you. Because that's something I want to take a look at, because it seems like teams have had better, more success scoring against the Titans in the red zone than previous years. And that's typically, you know, something that DMPs, it's bend but don't break, right? They inside from 20 to 20, you'll get some yards, but it's typically hard to score touchdowns on the Titans. But yeah, look at that. So red zone team opponent scoring percentage. So basically, that's a long way of saying red zone percentage of TDs allowed. The Patriots, number one.
As always, they're always good at that.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
I thought that was the case. I didn't know it was this bad. 85.7%. The Titans are 31st. What's really interesting is the Bills. This can't be right. There's no way a team is giving up 100% scoring percentage in red zone, but that's what it says that the Bills are giving up.
Wow. And that's the only team the Titans are better than.
That's the only team the Titans are better than, according to this.
If we're nitpicking at the defense, this is something we can nitpick at. The seemingly bigger weakness on Adoree Jackson's side of the field and this in the red zone here is pretty significant.
Yeah. And so it looks like the Titans are 21st, giving up 2 red zone touchdowns per game. The Bills, so it must be, now I must have to watch more Bills, which next week that's
they're
going
coming
to be
to
the
town.
Opponent. But they're 9th, giving up 1.3. So there must not be a lot of opportunities to score red zone touchdowns against the Bills.
Bills' defense has been good.
Yeah, so I guess if there's one thing you could kind of nitpick about the Titans' defense, it would be red zone, which is typically not something that a DMP's defense is poor in. But then another thing that I think they need to improve is, and they did it against Jacksonville, they need to improve in third down percentage.
Yeah, for sure. And that comes with how the opposing offense is setting it up. You know, how are they trying to get their yards when they get into third down situations? Are they trying to avoid them at all costs? It's all that. But I think it says something about this defense that we had to kind of work like that to nitpick at them a little bit. I mean, props to them, because they haven't lost, like we said earlier, they haven't lost these games because of them. They're doing a good job, and that's reflected in the stats.
End of the day, I don't see the Titans winning this game.
Sadly, I think it's a pretty steep mountain to climb.
Going into Atlanta to beat a Falcons team that's high-powered. However, I was wrong last week about the Titans beating the Jaguars. If I'm wrong this week about the Falcons beating the Titans, so be it. This is what happens, and that's why you watch the game. Calvin, excellent work. You made this easy. You filled in perfectly. I appreciate you. And, man, it was good being on Calvin's Corner for 2 hours instead of 15 minutes.
I appreciate it. And, hey, Chase McKay will be back here next week. Remember, you can find every episode of Talking with TD in Apple Podcast, wherever you find your podcasts. Just search Talking with TD if you want more of the great content Teron brings every week and all the hard work he puts in.
Deuces.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.